until you've learned the meaning.
As long as I get my kiss.
How do you like your toast in the morning?
I like mine with a hug.
Dark or light,
the world's all right. As long as I get my hug, I've gotta have my love in the a.m.
Or the rest of my day is positively mayhem.
I'm a regular monster.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Up or down,
I'll never frown. Eggs can be almost bliss, just as long as I get my kiss.
Call the meeting to order and ask everyone to stand and join us in the flag salute.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Get our secretary to do a roll call for us, please.
Thank you, Chair Hannan. Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Fuller.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Vice Chair Jenkins.
Here.
Chair Hannan.
Here.
Thank you.
All right, so at this time, we do have the public forum, which allows anyone to speak on items that are within the jurisdiction of the City of Goleta. And that are not on tonight's agenda. It looks like I have one speaker for the public forum. So Vivian Crawford, if you come on up.
Hi. I am going to pass something around. Real quick, this is a flyer. I think we even have it. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. So we have left a couple of these flyers out at with the planning staff here in the City of Goleta for you guys to get more information about what I'm about to speak about. I'm a student representative for the American Planning Association and the Central Coast chapter, and we are hosting a Santa Barbara Land Use Planning Academy boot camp, and basically it's a six-week course which is designed to teach you how to impact local land use decisions. It's designed for practicing planners, planning commissioners, developers, real estate professionals, and community activists who are interested in learning more about and refining their understanding of land use issues in our area. Subjects that we're going to cover include history, housing, climate change, energy production, transportation, water resources management, and development in the funk zone, to cover a couple of the things that we're covering. And all of these talks are going to be held by industry leaders in our local area. So it's really relevant to refine or, start learning some things about land use planning. It is a six-week-long series. It is going to occur starting February 10th on every Wednesday. It's going to be at the Santa Barbara Association of Realtors, so that's on Chapala Street downtown. The entire series itself will cost $145 for anyone who's interested in joining. If you're an APA member, it's $95. And if you're an APA member, you also get, or if you're AICP certified, you also get AICP credits. So that's a huge help for a lot of people. And it also, that cost includes basically just paying for the facilities and paying for the food that you get, because you get food at every meeting. So, yeah, that's basically why I came to let you guys know about this. It starts February 10th, and we hope that you will sign up online. You can look us up online at theopenspace-cc.com.
All right, thank you. And is it Vivon?
Yes.
Okay. Vivon. I'm sorry for...
No worries. It's all right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you too, Brent. Thank you. Bye, all.
All right. So we'll move into our business. Did we have any amendments or adjustments to our agenda this evening?
No, we do not.
All right. So let's go to administrative item number one.
A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of December 14th, 2015.
Thank you. All right. So we have time for discussions or motions on those minutes from our last meeting. They were included in your packet.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Any discussion on those minutes from the commission? Seeing none, I'll call for the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Looks unanimous, so we don't need to look for the next level here. Okay, let's go on to our next item, public workshop this evening.
Item B1 is a public workshop on the review of the draft zoning ordinance, part one, general provisions.
Good evening, Chair Onan and commissioners. Tonight, we are very pleased to bring you this first workshop of a series of workshops before the Planning Commission on our proposed new draft zoning ordinance. First, I want to introduce the key team that's here. Of course, the director, Jennifer Kerman, and Lisa Prossy is in the audience. She's a current planning manager. And then Andy Newkirk is a contract planner in advanced planning and has been part of the process since the beginning. And then Martha Miller, who's also been part of the process since the beginning, and she'll be giving most of the presentation. And, of course, Wendy Winkler. We would be nothing without Wendy Winkler. So I wanted to welcome the public, because this is a public workshop, and it's really nice to see members of the public here and to see a nice cross-section of our community, and hopefully that will grow as we get into some of the more nuts and the bolts of the workshops. This workshop is a little bit light because we're doing the beginning part of it to kind of get you primed up for some of the heavier stuff later. But before we kind of get into that with our presentation that Martha Miller is going to give, I wanted to just talk just a second about the public outreach. On Thursday, we'll be sending out cards for people who signed up to get mailers. We'll be doing a press release, an email. They'll be on our TV scroll on Channel 19. We'll announce the public meeting. So we have three open houses. The first one is January 27th. And that is from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. And then there's another one, and you can write them down, but you trust me, everyone's going to hear about this. February 27th is a Saturday, and it's going to be all day. So open house format, we'll have stations with different information with staff at each station so that people can come and ask questions and learn more and provide comment on specific targeted issues. And then the third one is April 7th. And that's also from 4 to 7, and I think that's a Wednesday. And then at every Planning Commission meeting, we'll be having different sections, different parts of the code that we'll be going through, like we're starting tonight. And then we also have stakeholder meetings. So the public is invited to call 961-7548 and set up a meeting to have like an hour, hour and a half meetings so that we can go over specific issues. If more than one meeting is necessary, then we will have more than one meeting. We're happy to meet with planning commissioners as well. So as we go, don't hesitate to call. We have a new intern. Her name is Helen Gannon. She's from UCSB, and her job is to work with us to set the meetings up and to develop the materials for the meetings. So we're really trying to have really functional meetings, and Helen's helping with that. And then I have to emphasize GledaZoning.com. So that's how you can sign up for information and get when new information is posted on the website, you'll get alerts. And that's the best place to find out what's going on. Also, historic information, past staff reports and future staff, you know, as the staff reports are released, will also get posted on GledaZoning.com. So also at the dais and at the public counter are some comments. So we're going to be starting to get public comments. We have a binder of public comments that we collected over time for the modules. And we're starting a new binder for public comments for the draft zoning ordinance. And I think most people were able to get a copy. I think we had four letters that came in since we've released the draft. And we'll keep, you know, feeding these to you because I think they'll help you as you form your comments. And it's also helping staff understand where the public's coming from and working. We have team meetings and we talk about the comment letters. So, you know, keep them coming and keep attending. And with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Ms. Miller.
If I could, just before you jump to that. So you've laid out a really a nice plan here with the public workshops. What is our goal to get this to City Council timeline?
So we have a slide that's on the timeline. And we're going to do what it takes. But the way we've laid it out is we have...
I didn't mean to steal.
Oh, no, that's all right. We have us. We think we can get through each. We can get through the key stuff in 7 planning commission meetings. So that'd be taking up every single one of your meetings, which gets you into April. So that's with, and then in addition to that, the open houses.
Sure. Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, if I may, could we maybe get the comments emailed to us on a weekly basis? Not necessarily all at once or as they come in, but, you know, like an update maybe on a weekly basis of comments by email.
I think we can do that. That's not a
great
problem.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
I was just going to ask if the public comments are also on the website for the public, or do they have to come in and see the binder? And is it possible to make them electronically available to the public?
Yeah, this question's come up a lot. We have some people that don't want their comments posted. Mm-hmm. And so we, respecting people's privacy, we put them in a binder. If someone really wants to come in and look at them, of course, it's public information. So we do have the binder that's... Mm-hmm. available at the counter, and people are free, and they can come and pick up hard copies here. But just posting on the web, people just don't want. Mm-hmm. Some people don't want their name searchable on the web or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So we are respecting that.
Is it possible to have a question where we ask people if they want it to be available or not?
We can talk about that. Yeah,
if it could be considered, that would be nice.
I also think if it's an organization. We could certainly post those. It's the individuals with names and phone numbers and contact info that we've been wanting to not, that we've been actually asked not to post online. But we could definitely take a look at what we have and see what we can do about that.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, Ms. Wells. As we're going through the ordinance and let's say we suggest a change or tweaking somehow, how do you envision that process? Is that something where we need a motion from the commission? We need a majority vote on something like that? So what's kind of the outline of how the process is going to happen? And if this is in your presentation, I'm sorry for stealing thunder.
It actually isn't, and it's a really good question. It's a workshop, so we don't necessarily need a motion, though you might want to. But we're taking notes. Andy Newkirk's over there with the computer typing in the notes, so when you provide input, let's say tonight you're talking about the way we're the measurement of height, and you have an alternative suggestion and we discuss it, maybe it's not resolved. Maybe it is resolved and you cumulatively have a recommendation, then we're going to take that recommendation and that will be recorded. So we'll have that, we'll basically we'll have that as a record that the Planning Commission recommends that we use this height measurement standard throughout the regulations. And then we'll have to look at everything at the very end to make sure that everything works, right? So it doesn't mean that we're doing an underlined strike through of it, because as we go, it may trip something up that we already talked about. So we'll have to continually go back and forth. But we will be, of course, recording. And you can, if you're unanimous on something and feel strongly, we do recommend that you give us your recommendation. If you choose to do that with a motion, that's fine, too. It's a workshop. Do it kind of however you want.
It's important to note that it's not an official decision. It's sort of like a tack point. And then when we come back to you for an official public hearing and a resolution, we will be going through all of those sticking points and letting you come to an official decision through the recommendation resolution if you're so desired to move forward with that.
Thank you.
And our minutes will be a little bit more detailed than usual so that we do have it in the record what the Planning Commission's discussion was about, and in focusing more on kind of the outcome and the direction, or at least even if it was open-ended, something for us to go back and research. So the minutes will be a tool for you and for the public to use in the future.
All right, back to you.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Martha Miller with RRM Planning Group. I'm just going to go over a short presentation today, and then it's really for discussion or any comments or questions on what we've gone over. But whenever kind of starting out, and especially starting out this being really the first of a series of workshops going through and discussing the draft zoning ordinance, I always like to remind us why we're here and what the purpose is. And the purpose of the update is really to give Goleta their first zoning ordinance that really is for and of the city. And so it's comprehensively revising what you're working with now, which was in a large part inherited from the county with sections that have been updated and amended over time. But to really take a comprehensive look at implementing your general plan and setting up the development regulations, the permit processing, the design standards that really helps Goleta achieve that vision that you set out in the general plan. Of course, consistent with state and federal law and all the other things that we need to follow. Specifically, with that, some objectives are to, you know, be easy to use and understand, understanding that this is something that's used by a variety of audiences. It's used by planning staff, it's used by property owners, it's used by community members, lawyers, architects, designers. There's a whole lot of people that use the regulations, and they are regulations, so inherently there is some complexity and some complication to them. But wherever possible, to make them easy to use, understand, use tables, use graphics, have cross-references, have clear interpretation. One of the struggles that I think this city has right now is with interpreting things consistently because of the way that your current regulations are set up and organized. And overall, achieving that vision for the city in a way that's enforceable and everybody is on the same page. And so just to kind of touch on the process, you know, this was something that started in 2013 in the fall, moved on with an annotated outline to set out kind of the basic framework for moving forward, and then the review of kind of chunks of regulations, so those preliminary modules of regulations. So in 2015, there is all of the modules, the draft regulations, all those comments and additional things to look at and consider were put together and into a staff review complete draft of the zoning ordinance. So what you have before you today, the draft zoning ordinance, is what came out of staff's review of all that and bringing it all together. So in the next 6 months or so, what the process is the public review and comment of that, going culminating in Planning Commission's hearings on that, which will be a formal recommendation to the City Council. So that's the only time where you really have to make a motion, when you get to the hearing stage and you're making that formal recommendation to the City Council, and then it's to City Council for adoption, hopefully in summer. But as we go through, time will kind of tell on how we're working on the process. So how the zoning ordinance is organized. The ordinance is organized into six parts, and those parts are outlined there. There's the first part, which is general provisions, which gives kind of that overall structure and some rules of interpretation for the ordinance. So this is kind of a technical reference piece of it. Part two is the base zoning districts, and these have regulations that apply in certain districts. So the regulations for residential districts, the regulations for commercial districts, the regulations for office districts, and so on. Then part three is the overlay districts, and these are regulations that will apply in a specific geographic area or specific area or context, and those either augment or modify the base zoning district standards. The fourth part is regulations that apply in multiple districts, and so these are regulations that typically will apply citywide. Parking, signs, standards that apply to specific uses wherever that use is located. And then part four is administration and permits, and that lays out the decision-making authorities and the review procedures for the different permits that are identified in the zoning ordinance. And then the last part is general terms, and this is another kind of reference tool for the interpretation of the provisions in the ordinance. So within each of those parts, there's chapters, and then within each chapter, there's sections and subsections, and that's really the overall structure and organization. The update does include updated zoning districts and an updated zoning map, and the zoning districts were really updated to implement your general plan. And so in the user's guide in the beginning of the ordinance, there's a chart that compares the proposed zoning district with the general plan land use designation. You can see the relationship between the districts and the general plan. And the map is updated. And the overlay districts are updated as well. And again, these update the airport environs, which is related to the airport land use plan, and then other overlay districts, which are identified in your general plan. So today we'll just be going through part one, and in subsequent meetings we'll be covering the other parts. But part one is the general provisions, and these are the introduction, establishing the authority, the general structure of the regulations, and it includes some of those rules for the interpretation for language and then rules of measurement. Just kind of go through some of those. So the introductory provisions start with the purpose of the zoning ordinance, the overall structure of it, basically explaining those the parts and the types of regulations that are within the ordinance. The applicability, and this includes just generally how do these rules apply, as well as how do they apply in relation to other regulations. You're in the coastal zone, and how does it relate to the general plan? How does it relate to the building code and those types of things? One of the things in here is how does it apply to projects that are in the process? And what is included here is kind of a three threshold kind of decision making or applicability. The first is if a project is already been approved. If it's already been approved, then you're subject to the rules that were in place at the time it was approved. So if it was approved today, then it's subject to your current zoning regulations. If a project has not yet been accepted for processing, so it hasn't been, there's been an application, but it's not complete, it hasn't been accepted for processing, at the time the new zoning ordinance would be adopted, that application would be subject to the new regulations. But, and then there's kind of an in-between of where you've been accepted for processing and you've started going through the process, but you haven't yet gotten approved. In that case, what's in here right now is that the applicant could choose whether they want to be subject to what's in place today or if what gets adopted later. So that's kind of that middle ground. The other parts of the introductory provisions just establish the districts and reference that official zoning map. The next chapter in this is the construction of language, and this is just really for if there's questions about interpretation. So when something references days, is it calendar days or business days? When you talk about the director of public works, is it the city of Goleta's director of public works? It's all these clarification languages for that interpretation when there's a question on what a word means or what's generally meant by that. And then there's the rules of measurement, which, again, all throughout the ordinance, when there is something that establishes what your density is or your height or the setbacks, this is where you would go if there's a question of how that is measured. And so what happens right now is that the city doesn't have a set of these rules. And the way things are measured, such as height, setbacks, lot coverage, what's included in that and what's not, really gets established by policy or by what we've done in the past, and that can change depending on when you come in, who you talk to, and so on. And so this is really to take a point that everybody can reference back to, and everybody's doing it the same way. We understand that in any time that you establish where that point is or where that rule is, if before there was no rule and you were on either side of the rule, this could help or hurt you, basically. It kind of, and so later in the zoning ordinance, when we get to that section, there is some a section on modification where there's a limited amount of things that can be modified based on things such as this. And that's to really kind of pick up for that slack that's kind of been happening over time, because the intention is not to punish through this, but it's to get everybody on the same page and understand that if that hasn't happened, to give some wiggle room for that. But there's specific areas where that can be allowed. So that's my kind of quick overview of just the zoning ordinance in general, and then the part one, which is really a reference kind of section. And then I guess we wanted to hand it back for questions or comments on any of the general provisions or how they're used or how they would be used going forward.
All right. You're giving it back to us already?
This quick is coming back to us. I would like to get the public's comments in early in the process so that we can have those available for discussion as well. Thank you. So it looks, are you all okay with us?
That's fine. Thank
right
you.
Away? Mm-hmm. Good. So it looks like we have four speakers, and I'll call the first speaker and the second one up behind them, and we'll give you 3 minutes to make your comments. Our first speaker will be Cecilia Brown, and our second speaker, Dr. Ingeborg Cox.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Happy New Year to you all. My name is Cecilia Brown, and tonight I'm speaking on behalf of the Goodland Coalition. We share the city's goals expressed by Ms. Carmen of developing a code that is city-specific, tailored to Goleta, and not a borrowed document as was adopted from the county's code. In that spirit, we are interested in fully understanding the city's draft zoning code, its changes, newly introduced material, and the impacts of those changes and what is envisioned, and that the zoning code standards reflect and are consistent with general plan policies. So I'm here to offer some observations that we hope will be helpful to you in the task before you. You probably have already ventured into the zoning code material in preparation for this meeting. At over 400 pages, the proposed zoning code is a daunting read, and I hope you don't do it before bedtime. Perhaps you have perused the numerical standards comparison tables as a guide to what has changed or how old code has been carried forward into the new code, and surely this is a good start. However, the vast majority of the code does not have numerical standards, which leaves us wondering just what has been carried forward, what has changed, and what is new. We haven't been told. You have to go in and do the work yourself. You have to look at the current standards and compare them with the new. And it's very laborious. I spent most of my Christmas vacation doing that for some items I'm interested. Therefore, knowing the differences would have made our preparation easier for these hearings. Ultimately, it is imperative that we have a reasonably clear and comprehensive understanding of the substantive changes from the old code to the proposed new code. And tonight, we've started the process with Ms. Miller, and it's helpful to know that this is all new, and hopefully you'll be asking questions about where'd you get it from and how you feel it's applicable to the city. So at this first meeting, and there will be many community and decision-making hearings, we urge you to take the time necessary to review the proposed code thoroughly and to think carefully and critically in considering the implications of changes and newly introduced standards. I know that both Commissioners Daniels and Jenkins have dealt with the county zoning code in their professional lives and know well that many unintended consequences of code written with good intentions but don't end up that way when applicants are forced to use them. Therefore, the devil is in the details, and it will be your job to find the devils. Anyway, we wish you very well as you undertake this critical review effort, for the results will be very important for all of us, for applicants, for you, for politicians, and for the city and its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker, Dr. Ingeborg Cox, followed by Barbara Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Inge Cox. I have lived in Goleta for over 30 years. I am puzzled why the city has spent all this money for a series of consultants to produce, in essence, a document that is not public friendly. Also, how can the city start to review an incomplete document that still has at least 18 chapters listed as reserved and still to come? It is not clear if the zoning administrator or the director are the same person. If this is the case, this person will have a lot of power and very few checks on that power. Remember the quote, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. For example, Chapter 1711, Public and Quasi-Public Districts. Under land use regulations, it should not be up to the director to assign what type of land will it be if a specific land use is not defined. The final decision needs to come from either the Planning Commission or the City Council. I agree with the Citizens Planning Association that the Planning Commission should be the decision maker for all precedent-setting projects. Determining the floor area ratio, 1703120. In a multi-story building scenario where one is dealing with multiple elevator shafts, all of the elevator shafts need to be counted on each building, not on only one. The communication equipment room needs to be part of the building and part of the floor area. Determining the lot coverage, to avoid misinterpretation stating only, quote-unquote, a not habitable structure is too vague. It needs further definition, like it cannot have electrical power or be connected to the sewer system. Determining setbacks, the setbacks need to be clear. They cannot be based only on definitions. Please give the citizens a real number. Also, the numbers for the setbacks should be consistent. There are different numbers for the setbacks, and that is very confusing. Regarding environmental sensitive habitats, four, this is Goleta. Consequently, El Estero, Carpinteria's law needs to be deleted. 11, please delete at the mouth of the Santa Maria River, Section 3597.17 Development Standards. The Western Snowy Plower needs to be mentioned and addressed. Section 3597.19 Development Standards for Stream Habitats. Under point 3, delete San Antonio Creek, which is in the Los Alamos area. Delete the Santa Ynez River. Delete Halama Beach and Santa Anita Creek. Please add Devereaux Creek, Bell Canyon Creek, San Pedro Creek, and the other creeks in Goleta. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Massey, followed by Carl Snyder.
Good evening. First, a few comments about the zoning ordinance in general. Having had two different people work on this since Mr. Diet retired, certainly hasn't worked. It seems little public input was incorporated into the draft after having spent hours of talking with Mr. Diet. It seems like that was all lost with him. One of the main problems with the zoning ordinance is that the zoning administrator seems to be the one designated for most of the decisions. This was the main complaint during the zoning code module discussions. It was made clear by the citizens at every hearing and even the Planning Commission that the zoning administrator should have few decisions. We want action taken only after public hearings before elected or appointed bodies, not have the staff making decisions on the shape of our city. Another serious problem was that the rules and regulations are not fully spelled out for each zone or issue. To find all the requirements, you must be referred to one or two more chapters. A good zoning ordinance would have all the information in one place so that you wouldn't have to go on an Easter egg hunt to find what's required. The least that could have been done was to include the page number of the referenced material. Now, part one. I would like to have the word progressive removed from 17.01.020 item A. The word suggests a pushing forward of development to finish the build out of Goleta. Most citizens of Goleta are in no hurry to have further lessening of our quality of life. Item D on that section should be removed. It is not the job of planning or the zoning ordinance to define the duties and powers of the administrative bodies and officers. That's the job of the City Council. On page I-3 under Permit Streamlining Act, the word adjudicatory should be replaced by a word that people really use and understand. This document should be readable to all, not require a dictionary to understand. The impression I got from this document was that the city doesn't want the zoning ordinance to be easy to read or understand, wants to severely reduce public noticing and participation, and doesn't care what citizens want. I hope the staff will listen and make the necessary changes on this. I am also extremely unhappy with the lack of proper noticing for tonight's meeting, and I'm unimpressed with the table of things we will be meeting on this because there's not nearly enough time being spent with the committee. The community and the Planning Commission and various other bodies to discuss this properly. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl Snyder, followed by Ken Elker.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Carl Schneider. I'm here as an applicant and architect and user of what this document is going to be. And it's been a long time coming, and I think we should all be happy that we're here, even though there's still a lot of work to be done. I'm going to try to be specific on most of my stuff. The first thing is I believe the use of some wording such as zoning districts creates conflict and confusion among users. It is typically not a word that I am familiar with, and I believe we need to be specific about whether we use zone district, zone use, special district, or district overlay. And I think if we are, and as you go through, and I've picked up this in several spots just in the I guess it's called a user's guide here, where it starts talking about that. And I would suggest that we clarify that as best we can and get rid of the use of zone district, because zone district is not an appropriate term, in my opinion. Then I've got a couple of other little things. Actually, one of them Ms. Miller noted was on item I-4, effects on projects within the entitlement process. And when she was talking about projects that are in the process but not necessarily approved, I believe we need to be specific. Do they have to do all of the new zoning? Do they have a choice between codes, or do they have a choice between items? Okay. Do they have to use the switch and use the entire new code or the old code, or can they pick and choose which items they want to use within the ordinance? I believe that needs to be clarified. On page I-13 that starts to talk about measuring heights and whatever, and definitions for mezzanines and basements, I believe we should try to be as consistent as possible. And I would suggest we use the definitions for those two that come from the California Building Code so that we are consistent with that document. And then, above that page, there's a little graphic which I find unclear, because it's talking about fence heights on top of retaining walls, and somehow you get to measure halfway down the exposed retaining wall, which I don't understand. So I'm just a little confused about that. And finally, I would like to point out, and I'm wondering about measurement of landscape, which is on page I-14, because it says no landscape area smaller than 5 feet in any horizontal direction will count towards required landscaping. Does that mean finger planters do not count, or other small areas like that? So I think that needs to be clarified. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken Elker?
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Ken Alker. I have a project in town called Kenwood Village. I just really had a question for Martha, and you mentioned the effect on previously approved projects, and that if they're approved, you're looking at the county zoning. And I just wanted to get a definition on approval, if that would be building permit or if that would be letter of completion. And I did find in D, and I-4, it talks about building permit, but I'm kind of hoping that could potentially also include people with a letter of completion. And if not, I might suggest it. Other than that, I think I will have some questions on the straddling of the two and how that works. I didn't totally understand that, but I'm going to reread it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So I don't have any other speakers, public speaker slips here. So with that, we'll close this part of the meeting, the public hearing, and we'll come back to the commission and to staff. And what's the commission's pleasure here? Do we want the staff to respond to some of those comments, or do we want to go into our discussion right away? All right. So we're going to ask if there's anything there that you feel compelled to respond to.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I think when start just big picture, I recommend that we talk about what is in the packet in front of you tonight, because we are trying to build into some of the more complex stuff, like zoning administrator and things like that. But we want you to first understand what it is that we're even talking about. The zoning administrator, for example, would be responsible for. And then what is that appeal process, and what is that public noticing process? So we would prefer to just to focus on these comments. But if you want to do otherwise, then we will do otherwise. So it's at your pleasure. We also would some comments that were made, for example, some of Ken Alker's comments and Carl Schneider's comments, we'd really encourage them to call and make appointments so that we can really understand their questions and have a dialogue back and forth. And we are sure you'll probably do that. But we just wanted you to know our door is open for individual meetings. And then we can maybe work through some of these items so when they come and talk to you, they're with more discrete resolution. There was one question that was directed to Martha Miller, and I think she wants to respond to that one, so I'll let her.
Okay, I was trying to take notes as fast as I can, and I apologize if I didn't get any. So I'm going to try and respond to the ones I was able to capture. As far as why there's reserved chapters and why there's so many, and that's because just in the future, down the road, if you need to fit something in, what usually happens now is people will make up an in-between number, and then your whole numbering scheme is thrown off, and so that's why we put the reserved sections in.
So if I may, nothing will show up in those reserved sections as code unless it is first adopted by the Planning Commission and the City Council with public hearings. Is that correct?
Right. Right. Let's see. The floor area ratio as far as counting elevator shafts only once, that's a pretty common thing. You know, everybody calculates floor area differently, and so Goleta is more than welcome to tailor it to fit. But the reason for that is there's some areas that are really kind of not used, or they're not space that's really part of the use. They're that space that is it's on one level and then it continues up because it's a stairwell or an elevator shaft. It's not a part of the use. It's part of the access for the building, I would say, in mechanical areas. So a lot of places will limit how these are included, or they won't include certain things, maybe even up to a certain amount of square footage. One of the things with the rules of the measurement, it's one thing to have a clear measurement. And once we all agree on the measurement, then we can decide what the standard should be. So that's when, if you know, well, elevators are included on every floor, then you might look at where maybe we allow a little bit more square footage or so on. So there's kind of that, depending on what you include in that measurement, influences what you establish as the standard.
Mr. Bullitt, yeah. So one of the things I think there's a something of a prevalent concern is the consistency with the as-built in Goleta, and as much as many people want to see a new zoning code and have our own Goleta identity, one of the things we want to also consider is keeping consistency, because so much of Goleta is already built out. How does this elevator shaft measurement in the mechanical room, electrical room, compare with the county's zoning ordinance that we inherited and that much of Goleta is already built out as? Do you have a comment, or do you have know how that is?
The answer to that question would be something that we would have to research, because there's, as you know, that those 11 by 17 tables are pretty extensive, and that's comparing the existing zoning with what's in the new proposed zoning. It's not the reverse. So we would have to go and do a little bit of homework to do that. But we did, as we went through and developed this draft, we were doing cross-checks, of course, with the general plan to make sure that we weren't getting sideways. And then we were going through and checking with those standards in the table to make sure that we, if it was getting changed, that it was going to be something that was within an allowance of a modification where it would be appropriate, where it would fit. So we were checking as we went through preparing the draft to do everything that we could to not create circumstances of legal nonconformity.
Well, as that's a concern of, that's been voiced here, it would be great if you could get back to us on that particular, those particular issues.
Commissioner Maynard?
I just have a direct question related to that as well. So just so I'm understanding process too, so tonight's session will focus on the general provisions. If for some of the questions, like what was just brought up, will we still have an opportunity to continue the conversation on general provisions next meeting to follow up on some of these pieces, or can we not comment after tonight on general provisions?
Well, these are your workshops, so we can do it however you want, and you can ask us to do things differently. I was intending, and we were intending to be taking notes and then kind of do aside from the minutes, do it kind of a wrap-up in the staff report or in the presentation for the next meeting. So we can go back and cover the loose ends, or if you don't feel that that's necessary and you want to jump into the next piece of material, then that's how we will do it. So we can change it anytime.
What you might also find is then when you get to the development standard, so there was a comment on, say, setbacks. And when we get to where we're looking at what those setbacks are, you may want to come back to how they're measured then, or the height of the fence on the retaining wall. So you might get to the section on what the height of fences is and say, well, if it's measured this way, then maybe we want to think about a different thing. So, because it's all related. And as much as we try and break it apart and take it piece by piece, it's all connected. So we end up coming back. On lot coverage, about the non-habitable space, there's an exception for a non-habitable structure up to 120 square feet. And that's a common exception. That 120 square feet is the threshold for when a building permit is required, and that's kind of a common exemption for lot coverage because people aren't coming in for permits for that. Let's see. As far as removing progressive from the purpose statement, you know, that's up to your commission if the language, you know, reflects what you hope to achieve. I would say, though, it is the purpose of the ordinance to define the duties and the powers of the people making decisions under this ordinance. So the ordinance needs to say who's responsible for doing what in the ordinance. And it is actually the city council does do that through their adoption of this ordinance. So it is up to them. As far as kind of catching references to terms and how they're off or help to be consistent, and actually if anybody catches anything like that, if you could submit them, it always helps as much as we try to be on top of it with our consistency and editing. We're always welcome to fresh eyes helping with us. As far as what code would apply, we could clarify that language, and the language actually could be changed by the wish of the commission. But I believe it was one or the other. You can't cherry pick kind of, oh, I like this ordinance of the existing code and I like this one of the new one. It would be one or the other, either the old provisions or the new provisions.
And we can clarify that in the language. Mm-hmm. Although there may be some people who will come and ask for that to the cherry picking to be able to happen, but we will clarify because that was never the intent. It's one or the other.
Let's see, the building code definitions, and we do strive to be consistent with a building code definition wherever possible. So again, if you want to submit those to staff where there's an inconsistency, that would be helpful. The measurement of the fence on a retaining wall. Different jurisdictions do it different ways. Some say, well, you measure from the highest point, so where the fence is, and then some say you measure from the lowest point where, you know, the retaining wall is. Goleta looked at some place in the middle, so you didn't get an excessively high fence or an excessively low fence. And that could change if you want to measure that a different way. And then as far as when the project is considered approved, I believe that was with the approval of the land use plan, and that's what would vest into the previous code. And then that's as far as I got in my notes, if there's anything else that...
Okay.
Land use permit?
Entitlement.
The entitlement. We're eliminating the land use permit from this administrative process.
But it's the existing code, and the existing code does have that.
Right.
So,
right. I would like to also add that for to Dr. Cox, the comment about the removal of everything Santa Barbara County related from Code 35, that's something that has bothered us from the get-go. because it's distracting when you're going through the code and it says San Ynez River, or it says something that's not within the city. And so that those references are all struck in the new version.
All right. So Commissioner Maynard, you were looking for an opportunity to speak. Go ahead.
Yes, I just had a quick question. So in that piece where we're talking about between application and approval of the project, what's the if somebody's in that gray area where they can choose which code to go into, how long of a period might it be from when their application was first accepted to when the project's approved? Like, so could somebody stay in that limbo zone for a long period of time?
Yes. They could, and there's a couple of different ways that they could that could be addressed. For instance, you could put in here, in that applicability section of for up to a year, you could put some time frame in for it. There are time frames for, you know, when environmental review needs to occur and when a project should go for decision between the time they're accepted and the those times, but as we all know, those can be extended and projects can be in process for a long time, yeah. So, but you could identify a time limit.
And just for reference, a lot of the projects that have gone on for quite a long time here all required legislative approvals to go along with their land use entitlements. That eliminates the permit streamlining clock. So we don't really have that countdown clock to follow when there's a legislative approval required, and that's the only thing that's made it okay, not really okay, but okay. And so looking at that in the future, that's the one thing, if a project that's currently in process has a legislative approval, that's where that longish timeline could be, and we'll have to address that somehow.
All right. Any other comments from the commission?
Well, I'd Mr. like Stevens. To start plowing through it, if that's okay.
We're going to go page by page here.
I just had one more question on the public comment, which was there was a question from the public about noticing tonight and how this meeting was noticed. So could just maybe Ms. Wells, could you just talk a little bit about how the meeting was noticed?
We notified the public through our normal planning commission noticing process, and then also on GoletaZoning.com. I think we also talked about it at our last planning commission meeting, and again on Thursday, when we start after Thursday at your next meeting, we're going to start getting into the really more complex stuff and numerical stuff, and I think and everyone's going to know about it. But we did public noticing for this meeting.
Thanks so much for going over that with us and making sure everyone is on the same page.
Okay.
All right.
Let's go to the beginning.
Well, I'm going to, first of all, state an apology disclaimer.
Oh.
I have to deal with these on a regular basis. And so my degree of scrutiny on it might be deeper than the comfort level of on this commission. So I apologize if I bore you to tears. So... that said, I'm just going to start. I'm going to kind of, first of all, I'm assuming that the user's guide is strictly for this draft. A user's guide will not be included in the final ordinance. Is that correct, or will it be? So it isn't. It won't be included. It's just for this scenario.
Right. It wouldn't be adopted as part of the ordinance. Correct.
Okay. So I don't have to get into the verbiage and the minutia of that. So I'm going to kind of move on from there.
If I could just interrupt, we do intend to create a user's guide.
Okay.
And it's more of a how-to for development. So it would take, I think it would address some of the concern about the language. And there's a lot of them out there for different cities, but it's something you can hand out at the counter and say, hey, I want to develop. How do I do this? And it walks them through the entire process.
Yeah.
So that's the user guide that will be post-approval.
Right. I asked. I think that's a great idea. I asked because I just don't think we as a commission have to spend our time worrying about that. I'm also kind of ignoring the table of comments or contents at this particular moment, just thinking that that's something that will get revised as we go down the road. On page 1-1, it talks about title and authority and lists several different titles, zoning ordinance, blah, 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 this ordinance, this title. Ironically, this title is the last one in this list, but is the one that is used predominantly. I don't know if it's just me, but I have a problem with the term this title. It seems very legal. And when I say, gee, why don't you go look at the city ordinance, they know what I mean. If I say, why don't you go look at the city title, I'm going to get a blank stare. And you look at, in Webster's, title has a whole myriad of definitions versus ordinance is pretty clear. So, and this is a global suggestion that wherever we say this title, I'm suggesting it should say this ordinance. It's only four more letters long. So in that same paragraph, we have a symbol that had people come up to me and go, what does this symbol mean? Well, it means section. And so somewhere in the definition area, we might be nice if we have symbols to offer an explanation of what that symbol stands for. So the little swirly gig thing right before the numbers.
Yeah, hold on.
Yes, okay. You want to do page by page?
Page by page.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else have comments on that first page? Go ahead.
There was a comment in the public section, public comment section in 17.120, the purpose section A. And I was wondering if you all could tell us a little bit about what you meant by progressively here, because I think it might be interpreted differently than you meant it, and I'm just kind of curious for your take on what A means.
Our general plan was written with a time horizon, mm-hmm. and so progressively was just over time that development would occur, not all at once. So it wasn't written assuming that everything would happen tomorrow.
All right. Ms. Maynard, anything else?
Okay. So it's not meant to imply how much growth or how fast growth, just to say that over time the different projects would be coming in. Is that correct?
Right. And we can take a look and see, you know, when we circle back if there's maybe a better word.
Okay.
Or if you want to suggest a better word.
Okay. I'll take a look at that and maybe as we're circling back, I can think of some better language there. Thank you.
All right, anybody else on page one? Mm-mm. Going to page two. Commissioner Jenkins, you're leading the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the structure of zoning regulations, that may be fine to use that language. I think I would prefer to say structure of zoning ordinance. Again, kind of leaning more towards the term ordinance versus regulation. So that would be on the top. And then under A, I would suggest that it's just organization, period, instead of organization of regulations. But that's just a suggestion. So I agree with Mr. Schneider's comment about districts, and I think that it is rather confusing because we have zone districts, overlay districts, multiple districts, and then there's also special plan districts. So we're district to death in the definition of this. And so I would suggest that we go back to land use zones when we're talking about zoning districts. So also where in part two, it says base zoning districts. If we eliminate the word base, I have no problem. But if we include the word base, I'd like to have a definition somewhere in the back that says, what is a base zoning district? All right, there is none. But I would suggest instead of zoning district, I would suggest that we use the term land use zone. Let's see, it's less confusing, and especially when we get to pages 5 and 6, you'll see what I mean. Under four, A4, regulations apply to multiple districts. Again, we're using that term district. So perhaps it should say multiple zones or overlays. Getting down to terms, general terms under number six, I think I'd like to say general terms, comma, use classifications and definitions. So if this is, it's almost a you know, where to look for definitions, because it's nowhere. It might be in the index, but I'm not certain on that. Moving on to B1, just the language, certain regulations down the last sentence. Certain regulations, there should be no comma. Certain regulations applicable to multiple districts, there should be no comma. So it's talking about certain regulations applicable to multiple districts. Remove that comma. B2, again, the term, kind of about the two-thirds of the way down, certain development regulations, there should be no comma there as well after regulations. Certain development regulations applicable, it should just run into it. I do want to add a comma at the bottom of this where it says, these include regulations for specific uses, antennas, we're saying parking, sign, antennas, and wireless communications and non-conforming uses. I think it should say signs, antennas, comma, strike and then say wireless communications. Under B4 on page 2, it talks about general terms and classifications. Are these regulations, I guess, is the question. And they are. I think you, Ms. Miller had suggested it was, so I've answered my own question there. I would add general, so at where it says provide list of use classifications, I would add comma, general terms, comma, and definitions. So again, along with my suggestion for A6. So I'm done with page 2.
Mr. Maynard, anything on 2? Anybody else on 2? Mr. Daniel, anything on 2?
No.
Okay, anybody want to lead the way on 3? I don't want to go.
So I just want to play devil's advocate. I mean, are we going to eliminate the word regulation and replace it universally with ordinance?
I don't think so. I think these are regulations. So it's where it says this title is what bugs me. So I did suggest structure of zoning ordinance, and so I could go either way on that.
Right, because I mean, if you come down into like the B section, types of regulations, right? Well, you know,
right.
We're talking about, you know, land use regulations.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I don't think it's a point of confusion really for the public, I suppose. I may have gotten us down a path regarding that. That maybe I regret, but so regulations I think is fine in this section. It's the title that I think is the real problem. But
so the regulations contained within the ordinance, basically,
correct,
is what you're
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification,
Commissioner Maynard.
I thought of some different wording, but it's back on page 1. I don't know if you want to go backwards. I promise I won't jump back and forth very much. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Okay. How about to provide a precise guide for the physical development of the city in a manner as to conscientiously achieve the arrangement of land uses over time? I think it gets back to it. It emphasizes conscientiously, so it thinks about conscious growth and careful growth. So it emphasizes some of what the public was looking for.
Okay. All right, we're moving on to page 3. Anybody want to lead the way on page 3? If not, Mr. Jenkins has got a bunch of notes here. He'll get us through it. So,
A1, sorry. A1 in the middle of the paragraph. We have corporation or organization, comma, or the city of Goleta, or other local state. It should read corporation or organization, comma, the city of Goleta, comma, or other local state federal agencies. A2, this is where I would like to see, you know, where it says any zoning district, I'd rather have it say any land use zone. B1.
Go ahead, Mr. Daniels.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Quickly, I'm looking at this in my eyes, you know, having dealt with this for a long time, and we're talking A2 compliance with regulations. I see two no's in one sentence. No and can be used, and no structure can be constructed. There's got to be a better way to say that. I mean, even for me. I would like to see zero no's in this area, but I don't know that I am able to. I see them in a couple more places, and where we had to do our reading today, and so I'll pipe up when I see the other ones, but. Just look at A2 on page I3 and see if you can any can be used, any structure can, you know, you can. I'm not going to do this on the fly, but it's not. To say no. Go ahead, Ed.
So, what you're maybe thinking is turn it into the positive. All land use and all buildings shall be in conformance with the provisions of this title, as opposed to no shall be not in conformance. So, all shall be.
Again, I'm not going to do this on the fly. I'll just let the staff go through that.
And I would offer, if you could just say to take out the no's or that, and we can work on the wordsmithing, because you're right, it's not, okay. A thing to wordsmith in front of a panel at the time like this. But right. If you let us know the intent or what you'd like to see, we can take it back and take a stab at it.
I'd appreciate K-N-O-W no's. Okay.
All right. We're going back to Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just getting back to zoning district versus land use zone. When I think of district, I think of a big area. Well, you look at the zoning map, and you might have one parcel is one zone. So that whole little parcel is a district, and that's confusing. I have no problem with the overlays. We'll get into that. But so that's another justification why I wanted to go that route. On B2, let's see. It states provisions of government title, section yada yada, whereas on page 1-1, it refers to California government code. So I think we should be consistent. So I think California government code is probably a little bit, unless it truly is a different document. Number three, relation to private agreements. I just had a note, what does this mean? It just seemed a little difficult to understand, at least when I read it. So, and I was going to suggest a rework of it, but I don't have any suggestions at this time for language. It just seems very a bit confusing. So that's it for number three for me.
Good to number four. Anybody else have comments on this page?
Just as a follow-up on that, can you just talk a little bit about what B3 means?
Yeah, so if there's an easement that this ordinance doesn't interfere or get rid of that easement, that's a private agreement between the property owner and somebody else, and that holds. But where this ordinance it's more strict than the ordinance holds. But people come in, I would say sometimes there's confusion of, PG&E has this easement, and they say I can't build anything, but you say that I can, you know, put something on this area of my lot. You know, that's confusing.
And if I may, like with that easement, say it's for access. Well, if the city, you know, if they have an 8-foot access easement and the city's requirement is 12 feet, well, then the city's requirement of 12 feet for an access, you know, would be the rule as opposed to the 8-foot. Am I correct?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you.
So in general, it's whichever is more restrictive.
Right. And the city's also establishing that they're not getting involved with the private agreements.
I-4, 1-4.
Mr. Chair, on item 5, application during local emergency, I understand the need for this. It states that it's without notice or public hearing. Is that customary? Wouldn't it be done at a public hearing? Wouldn't it be done at a city council meeting, which is a public hearing? Or would it be done behind closed doors?
Right. Well, there may be something that is truly an emergency and they need to go out and take care of it.
Okay.
In the middle of a storm or a wave surge or something like that, right, where there wouldn't be time for that.
Okay. And then should we stipulate any particular time frame or an action to rescind after the emergency has passed?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It may be in a different section of your municipal code, but we can check that, and if not, we can.
Yeah, they only last for a certain amount of time, and I don't have the number of days. But one example is the current local emergency with the oil spill, and we keep having to renew that, so that way we still have that in effect. Sure. I believe it's 30
it's
days.
30 days.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, logically, it makes sense. If you have the fire burning in the foothill, you don't want to have to call a public hearing to be able to say, go fight the fire. So I get it.
Can I ask you a follow-up question on that?
Sure.
So how does city council make that decision? Like, do they all get contacted in email, or how's that done?
Well, I think it would depend on the emergency. I think in the past, it was a special meeting that was put together. I mean, in the event, let's say this building didn't exist anymore, the emergency is that bad. I don't know how we would do it, but it would be, you'd have to get all the council members in one place, or at least four of them. So,
if there's an emergency, then you have to make certain findings so that we can act immediately at a staff level, and then we return as soon as possible, but no less than, I think it's 30 days to give a full report to the city council, and then you go through a formal permitting process. But that way, there's nothing stopping you from responding to a fire, for example, or a flood.
Is this section even needed in the zoning ordinance?
Yes, and it's in our zoning ordinance now, so it's okay. Very similar to what we use now, and which is pretty similar to other agencies. Because in emergencies, many times they're regional, so it's good to have a little bit of consistency, so you're kind of responding somewhat consistently.
Under D, I think at the very end it says regarding time, let's see, no extensions of time shall be except for the California Building Code granted. Extension from the zoning administrator, I think you're going to want to include the building official as well in that, because if a building permit has been issued, it's more than just land use, isn't it, at that point? For this particular section, it's talking about you've got a permit in hand. It's talking about the California Building Code. Think about it. Let's see. You answered my question about choice of applicant under E, so thank you for that ahead of time. Let's see. The City Council, under the bottom one, 17.1.060, fees and deposits. I'm just going to have to read this. The City Council must establish by resolution and may amend and revise from time to time fees and deposits for processing applications and other permits authorized or required by this title. I suggest that we add, with the exception of building and grading permits. So it's suggesting that all fees must be paid at the time application is filed, and no processing can commence until fees and deposits are paid in full. Well, if you have a building permit, you pay for your plan check up front, but you don't pay for your building permit until you've actually got the approved set of plans. Likewise for grading. So you submit, you pay a plan check fee, and then you pay a permit fee later. So in that situation, those would not be due up front.
Any comments? Note taken? Okay.
I'm done with sheet four.
Okay. Mr. Daniels?
Page four.
Page four, please, Chair. I'm at C1, consistency with general plan and local coastal plan. Here's an area where title is used too many times, but that's an aside. I'm just making sure that Mr. Jenkins gets his.
I've stopped mentioning him because, yeah. I mean, it's title. Right. It's just a global suggestion. Yeah. Uh-huh. Everywhere it says this title, I would like to say this ordinance.
I agree. Anyway, second sentence. No, there isn't a second sentence. It's just one big long sentence. But I will start with the end of line two. Goleta General Plan, comma. The local coastal plan and all applicable areas and specific plans, in any case, where there is conflict with this title, and I'm guessing that's local coastal plan at this point, and the general plan prevails. I don't think that's true. I don't think you can have the state ordinance, has to trump the city ordinance. So you understand?
Yes, we understand. We'll get to that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's all on C. Thank you.
Still on page four?
That's all on page four.
Go ahead, Commissioner Mayor.
I know we've been asked to limit our comments on the zoning administrators. I won't go into much detail here, but because it is mentioned on this page, I have a couple comments. So I think there was one question in the public comment about whether the zoning administrator is also the planning director. Who's that person within? Could we get a little bit of information about that here, just so we can understand the context on this page?
Sure, we can read you the description of the zoning administrator, and Martha Miller is turning to that page right now.
Okay. So the zoning administrator is on page 5-3, so it's 1752-060, and the zoning administrator is the director or a city staff member appointed by the director.
And then my questions for this page specifically, I think it would be helpful to know under what conditions the zoning administrator could offer an extension to give some guidelines or expectations that the public understands that an extension could be made, make that process of decision making a little bit more transparent. And I would also recommend a limit for how long that extension could be before it goes back to Planning Commission or the City Council. So how long of a period of time are we looking at that could be extended?
The timing for permit extensions is in administration and permits. And okay. So there's a whole process involved in that. What I would just suggest is that, you know, this could say unless the applicant has secured an allowed permit extension period.
Okay, and then we'll talk more about that when we get to administration permits. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on page four? Page five. Oh, Mr. Fuller, go ahead.
Thank you. Just one I believe there's probably an assumption here in D that regarding a building permit being valid, provided at least one inspection has been requested and posted for the primary structure on the site where the permit is issued. Is that before the adoption of this ordinance or at the time of the adoption of this ordinance?
So
at the what point in time, you know, and does that relate with this ordinance?
So, right. So it's at the time. Hold on. Right. So at the time of the adoption of the ordinance, there has to be at least one inspection that has been requested.
And I understand there's probably only going to be one adoption of this ordinance. So
right.
That will, you know, be memorialized forever, but right. It might be good to have that in there just so it's clear that, you know, that's what that's talking about. Just,
okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's a better elaboration than shovels in the ground, which is typically what's used in layperson terms.
All right, we're to five. Mr. Jenkins, why don't you
All right,
going?
Thank you, sir. At the top where we're saying districts established, I would suggest that it would say zones and overlay districts established. Again, with the issue of the districts. The first sentence, rather than it says the city is classified into districts or zones, I would suggest it's classified into land use zones and overlay districts. Item A should say land use zones instead of base zoning districts. And then, the you know, it just repeats itself, land use zones. It states, as shown in table 1701A, comma, base zoning district, I would suggest that you just strike that and just say table 1701A below, colon, because it's directly associated with it.
Yeah, just generally, one of the reasons that we try to give the section number as well as the title, because if you imagine these tend to be used 10, 15, 20, mm-hmm. 30 years from now, and as they get amended, something below might not always be sure. Below, or a number might get interdisposed, or numbers change. So if we have both those keys, it seems redundant, but it ends up being easier for the overall ongoing maintenance of the title of the ordinance.
I know, I don't know where, but I know I saw the term below later on. So we just want to be consistent on that. So I think staying clear and concise is
sure.
Good. So I appreciate that. I would again, instead of base zoning districts, I would title it land use zones. And that's just kind of globally in this whole table. For zoning overlay districts, I would suggest the term either overlay district or special overlay district. So I don't know what would be more clear for the public. And let's see. I think I prefer a special overlay district, but I can be persuaded. And then when we have a table break, you know, it goes on to the next page. I think we should state for the table continued on next page below it. Obviously, when this is revised and reformatted, the table break may not happen at a page, so therefore I understand that you don't want to add it.
It also gets hard when this becomes an electronic version as well and the page number. So,
and you scroll through.
Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So we'll leave it to the person to try to figure it out. Perhaps maybe we just try to, well, never mind. I'm good. I'm done with five.
Okay, we're done with five.
Nope, we're not done.
We're not done with five. Commissioner Jenkins is done with five.
Okay, good.
So, Commissioner Fuller.
Just to, you know, piggyback further on Commissioner Jenkins' comments. So we would have residential zones and not residential districts.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Right. That's okay. Why I said global.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have one question. So how does the mixed use lay into these zoning districts?
Well, so mixed use is a development type. And so there's, you know, different districts where a mix of residential and commercial is allowed, or both is allowed. And I guess that goes with one of thing to consider if you do use land use zones, because then it implies that it's a residential land use zone and a commercial land use zone. So you would only expect to see commercial land uses in that area, but a commercial land use zone might allow residential land uses. Just something, you know, maybe that isn't confusing to you, but it's something that you just might think about in naming it, maybe it. But so mixed use, whether, and by mixed use, you mean residential and commercial or office and commercial? Because
in particular, yeah. I'm interested in the residential and commercial link, but it was also a broader question because it seems so segregated here. I'm not quite sure where the mixed use comes in. That might be in the definitions later, but I just wanted to clarify that.
And again, these are just the names of the districts. When we get into the district standards and what uses are allowed in each of those, that's when you see the types of uses that are allowed. Okay. These are just the names of them and what they relate to in the general plan.
Right, we named them as closely as we could to the general plan land use designations because mm-hmm. we're also updating the zoning map, so everything matches. Mm-hmm. And again, getting back to the entire point of this is making sure the zoning ordinance implements our general plan and everything's consistent.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, anything else on page 5? And just for clarification's sake, because as we go through this and we're repeating this conflict with zoning districts. I have no conflict with zoning districts. So in the process that we've been in and hearing that terminology and working with that terminology, that doesn't necessarily create confusion for me. So, you know, by repetition, and if we're going to come to consensus as a group here that we think this should be eliminated or changed, otherwise, we've made the note, and I think we need to not, by the repetition of it, adopt it as a new policy. Because as I say, I don't have a problem with where we're at.
I respectfully disagree with you on it.
And I'm we have that disagreement yeah. well documented.
Sure.
I think that we should just allow that section of that discussion to take place. That can take place right now if we want it to, but going through that detail on each and everything is going to, by itself, create that conclusion, I'm afraid. So,
if the commission would prefer not to have that discussion right now, and depending on Commissioner Jenkins' opinions on this, we can take your notes global and assume that that is your note on every place where we talk about zoning district versus the overlay district area.
I've noted it. I just didn't want to bore you with every place I've noted it.
So I think, you know, we could say that we understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. We've made those notes. And if you don't want to go into it on each one, it's there still. Mm-hmm. We already know that that's your preference.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate, Mr. Onan's, Mr. Chair, your opinion on that, too. It is... There are specific differences between a land use, between a zone and an overlay. And you're calling them both districts. And that's where the public will get confused. And then there's a third item that you're calling a district. And that's, we're about to hit it on page 6, which is a specific plan district. So now you have three things that are termed districts. And that's where the confusion lies, and that's where the rub is for me. So if you want to call it zone district, fine. Just don't call it a special overlay district. Call it an overlay something or other, okay? So that's my logic in it. So call it a land use zone that's consistent with many different jurisdictions. And it's, there's, you know, when you tell someone you're in land use zone, there's no question in my mind. And then the overlay district. So anyhow, I'm ready to move on to 6 if somebody is ready.
Okay, are we still good to go on a little further? We need a break.
I had one follow-up. So, Chair Onan, what's your counterpoint to that? Are you concerned about the time it would take to go back and replace that many? Or I'm curious about why you have a different opinion on that.
I just don't share his opinion.
Okay.
So I didn't want it to be represented as a conclusive consensus okay. of this commission at this time.
Okay. Sorry, I was asking for the follow-up just because I don't have a strong opinion yet, and so I was excited to hear both of your perspectives so I could make a better decision myself.
Yeah, I'm not saying I wouldn't agree with him eventually, but at this point I'm not ready to sign on to that change. Mr. Fuller.
If I may, if we could maybe ask our great staff to do a little more research into, you know, old terms versus new terms versus, you know, what's the current cutting-edge terminology that's being used by communities. I think, you know, land use zone is pretty, you know, archaic, but still relevant, you know. I mean,
it's a zone.
You know, words mean words. And you know, just personally, I didn't have any problem with zoning district until Greg, Mr. Jenkins mentioned, you know, like one parcel, you know, could be zoned, you know, and that making that a district doesn't quite, you know, work. Yeah, my concept as well. So if you maybe could give us a little background more of what we're calling it and why, does that sound?
Well, that was what I was going to suggest is all we right. do, we come back to you and Thank that'll you. Be at the beginning of the next session where we go through points that came up during this one. So.
Sounds reasonable.
That's yeah. good. That's good.
Page 6. Only 400 more to go. Hang in there.
Not that bad.
Anybody want to lead off other than Mr. Jenkins? But I'm not trying to cut Mr. Jenkins off. But give each one of us an opportunity. Seeing no one jumping forward, sir, please.
Under D4, if we change it to zone from district, I apologize to those who are in the O zone. So going from O district to O zone. So, but I still think it's appropriate. I really don't, other than the zoning and the globalization of some of the suggestions, I don't have any specific comment on sheet 6.
Anybody else? Going to 7.
I'm sorry, backing up just briefly. Under the specific plan districts, I did make a suggestion, maybe call that one specific plan areas. So you've got zones, you've got overlay districts, and then you've got specific plan areas, right? So that's giving three different items specific different names, so eliminating the district. So that's my suggestion to staff.
Page 7. Page 8.
I'm sorry, I did have 7. Sorry. B1, can you give an example of this? It says where any public street or alley is officially vacated or abandoned. Do we have an example of what that, or a clarification of what that is?
Just if there were a public right of way that the county's abandoning.
But you're abutting, it's talking about the parcel abutting that portion. So in the real world, what does this mean?
Let's say in Old Town, behind the block where Domingo's Cafe is, there's a working alley. And there's a parking, loading zones. Let's say for whatever reason, the city decided with the cooperation of all those folks on the block to vacate that alley and give that portion of each alley to each business. So it would be the regulations that they're using right now for those lots that would apply to that vacated portion.
Okay.
But it seems to almost bring up more questions. What if there's two different zones abutting the parcel or the vacated thing? You know, you're just saying regulations, mm-hmm. so that almost implies that the regulations from both zones then all of a sudden apply.
Each parcel has to be in one.
Right, but if there's a street and on one side you have residential and on the other side you have commercial, and you abandon that alley or that street, then what, you know, regulation applies?
Right, but it's saying each parcel of abutting property apply to that portion of such street or alley added to. So it would be whatever it's added to.
So whatever parcel it's added to.
If they split it, half goes with that, and half goes to the other.
Okay.
If it's one way.
Okay.
Down the middle.
Good.
And it's, I'm not saying that will ever happen. I'm just saying that that was something, you know, that just popped into my head about we have an alley. Okay, I remember that. So not proposing anything. Just want to make that clear.
B2, it talks about, again, an abandonment of a right-of-way or easement, railway. Do we need to specify abandoned for how long? I mean, someone's interpretation of abandoned might be different than another's.
We can look into that. There's a lot of government code that will supersede us, and a lot of this wording sounds like these big words that we don't use in everyday language. It's because it's coming from the government code. So we can take a look and see if there's a time limit on that.
But it's abandoned in that it's no longer a right-of-way or an easement for that. So it's not a temporary, oh, I'm not using it right now. It's a permanent abandonment.
Mr. Fuller.
So you could almost say where and when it becomes abandoned?
You got it.
This is definitions.
Not going to commit to
No. We're setting up the section for the detail in a different section or part. But I think I understand what you're asking, and we'll look into it.
Anything else on page 7? All right, next page, page number 8.
I have nothing.
I'm sorry, what was something? I'm just going to note that and/or has the same definition as or. Am I missing something?
No, that's actually correct, because it could be and, which would be make them all, or which. So say there's a list of 4 things that are and or. So you could do all 4, or you could do 3, 2, or 1. Thank you.
Okay, and then so if you only have 2, then you only use or.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Or if you had 3 and you used or, then, right.
Well, but then you'd have to use or twice. No, I forget it.
Commissioner Fuller, if you go to the next page, those types of construction of language are there for you.
Eight. Anyone else have comments on page 8? Seeing none, we're moving on to page 9.
Yes.
Commissioner, Commissioner Maynard. Yes. I'm sorry, I was looking in this direction, so we're going to Commissioner Maynard first.
I would just like a little help understanding H and I.
Oh, I wanted to say it.
So, that's basically to clarify that you can't argue applicability because of the tense doesn't apply, or it you're doing something singular, but the standard had plural in it. You know, oftentimes we see things written with S in parentheses, you know, that so we don't have to make sure that we're doing that every time. And that when written in the present tense, it applies to whether something's, you know, exists. It applies.
I had to jump in my friend's DeLorean and go to 88 miles an hour to figure this one out. The present tense includes the past and future tenses, and the future tense includes the past. I don't get the pluralization issue you're commenting about.
Okay.
And that, the future doesn't include the present.
Just remember, wherever you are, there you, or wherever you go, there you are.
And and we can look for examples and bring them back, but this is really, some of these are, and hopefully they're not used very often or needing to be used, but they're really for if there's ever a question. And as we know, in the, you know, in the land development business or the permitting process, you know, things can get very nitpicky in interpretation of what applies, and if the tense wasn't correct, does it apply? And this is really kind of that catch-all, is no matter whether we used correct grammar or not, or the correct tense of a word, it applies.
I think I heard you say you'd bring back examples.
Yeah, when we come back for our next meeting and we have our wrap-up from this meeting,
yeah, I think
we'll go back and do our homework and bring back an example so you understand the context of what it means. And then if you still don't like it, then we can talk about other solutions.
I would say HNI.
Okay. But I would also suggest we might not have an example, because I think if we're using the wrong tense, I mean, I'm hoping we're not using the wrong tense in this. But this is really for if something at some point gets added in and it's written, like I said, with the wrong tense, or something is singular, but it really, is dealing with something that is plural or plural, and somebody's arguing, well, it doesn't apply because you used the past tense and this is not, you know, mm-hmm. present. They can't use that argument to mm-hmm. get out of a regulation.
I just want to thank you for that explanation and maybe suggest that H and I sound more like what you just said, because that seemed very understandable to me and was very clear at what you're trying to achieve there. When I read this, I felt bad for anybody from the public who is trying to read this. It's more confusing than it has to be, and I think your explanation was just so beautiful right now. Could we capture that in the language?
We can try, but I would also say, besides the public, this is used by lawyers. And so while we do try and make it as kind of lay term as possible, we have to remember that these are regulations, and it is law, and which is why we often have, and as Ms. Carmen pointed out, user's guides for the development and explaining things, because as simple as we would like to write it, sometimes makes it more complicated when we need to administer it and when we're dealing with lawsuits or, you know, whatever you may have. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Moving on to G, or back to G on the same page. Since under the permissive, we included the word should, under the mandatory, should we add the word shall?
Actually, that is something, and I don't know if Ms. Kai wants to speak to that, but shall is something, and our attorneys have said we should not be using. It's must, not shall. We shall not use. We can say it, but we just can't write it. So
okay.
it should be must, and okay. That's what they would prefer.
All right. Okay. All right, any more on page 8? Page 9. Ooh, don't. Let's not go backwards. Page 10. All right, anybody got some comments for page 10?
Real briefly, Mr. Chair, under yes. calculating density, I would suggest that we add calculating dwelling unit density, just to make it clear. And then down at the bottom, it should say calculating dwelling unit density. I think that's what we're talking about, is dwelling unit. Just, we know, or at least planners know, density is talking about unit density, but I think it might be helpful just to spell it out. That's all I have for 10.
Anybody have anything else for 10? Moving on to 11. Measuring distances.
I do have something.
Okay.
At the bottom on A1, non-sloped lots. On lots sloped less than 10%, building height is the vertical distance measured from the average elevation of the highest and lowest point of the natural grade of the site prior to development at the building pad area to the topmost point of the roof, but not including allowed projections. Prior to development, is a bit of an issue. So if I think of the Cortona apartments that we approved recently, building height should have been established on what it is now, not by what it's going to be. And so I think that's where this is a little confusing. I would actually suggest that we strike the words prior to development, and then it's just take it out and just state lowest point of the natural grade of the site at the building pad, because I think you could get into trouble with regards to saying prior to development.
One thing that we've used in the past, or I've used in the past, is natural or finished grade, whichever's lower. Mm-hmm. So that way you can't dig out and get something down. So you would either use natural grade or finished grade and make those calls on. I think that's what we were trying to get to with prior to development, mm-hmm. is making sure that no one's going to dig out to get extra height, mm-hmm. Or build up to get extra height. So it's...
Right, but as you go to the next diagram, this is where I got thinking, you know, you have, you know, the average highest and lowest point of the grade. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you're suggesting prior to development, and I'm suggesting that may be either a little too restrictive or mm-hmm. maybe too liberal. It's probably too restrictive, to be honest with you, but it's, I'm kind of leaning towards striking prior to development in that A1. But.
And you mentioned the Cortona. Were you talking about on the Kellogg?
No, the Cortona apartments we did. Mm-hmm. When you walk that site, it's not all flat. There is a berm on the east, southeast end. There's a berm you step up, and that's going to be graded down. Or there's going to be some grading in that area based mm-hmm. on... We never had a finished grading plan before mm-hmm. us, but... When you walk the site, clearly that was going to change. The building pads are not going to be based on what that existing mm-hmm. grade is. But that answers your question. Mm-hmm. In the same paragraph, it says, but not including allowed projections. What are allowed projections?
You're called out later in the...
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Bell towers. Mm-hmm. There's a number of projections mm-hmm. that allow.
Okay. That's all I have for page 11.
Commissioner Maynard.
Great. First, to go just to the conversation that just occurred, I would just support Planning Director Carmen's comment about whichever is lower, because I think the real concern is what's the overall height and view restrictions to the mountains. So I like the, instead of prior to development, maybe whichever is lowest.
To be a devil's advocate, Mr. Chair, if I can just respond. In that same paragraph, we're saying highest and lowest point. Mm. So how do you say whichever is lower when you're talking about highest and lowest point? It's the average elevation of the highest and lowest point.
Well, and if you use natural grade in that, it does keep somebody from building up the site in order to get additional height for views. Yeah. On the next page, with generally sloped lots, we do talk about natural finish grade. Okay, so that gets more to the dig out situation.
Okay. Then I'd stick with the naturally, mm-hmm. the natural grade then.
Anything else on 11?
I do have one more on that. So measurements involving a structure. Measurements involve, and so this is 170350C. Measurements involving a structure are made to the closest support element of the structure. Structures or portions of structures that are entirely underground are not included in measuring required distances. To use an example here, I'm worried about something like a creek setback. I wouldn't want underground construction to go closer to the creek than the rest of the creek setback would allow. So I guess I'm a little concerned about the underground component and curious if that's something that's already allowed in our current process or not.
Well, if there's if there's something underground in the creek setback, you're going to have to be able to access it from the surface when you do your grading. So that won't be allowed because you won't be able to grade out your creek setback in order to install something underground. There are some things that are allowed, like your BMPs, your drainage, some things like that, like pipes might be underground. But I don't think, I mean, right now we don't have underground structures that would be in the creek setback because, again, they would have to grade that buffer out.
And typically, the creek setback or any kind of habitat buffer is a setback for disturbance, for any disturbance, not for a structure.
Okay. So what's an example of where you could do something underground that wouldn't be included here? I guess, what's a good example of that then?
Well, we'll talk about that, but then we'll also talk about how this is measuring distances and the determinant of setbacks. Mm-hmm. So in some areas where, say, floor area is limited, and they only count the floor area above ground, they can excavate very large areas. I know Beverly Hills is one example. Property values are very high, and people want a lot of square footage, but they have limits for floor area that just apply above ground. So they have much larger areas underground than they may above ground. So that's a case where something might come out. You don't really have that case here. And what for measuring distances, and these are typically for distances, so these are typically, say, a buffer for between land uses, like adult businesses can't be within 300 feet of a school or something like that. So that's really the distances where you're looking at where that structure is or that use, or if you had view corridor setback areas that are open. And then setbacks, so in the determining of setbacks section, there's also just how setbacks are measured. But so within each standard, you have to look at, you know, what is that referring to? And so typically a creek setback or anything that has to do with habitat, because you're also looking at the root zone and areas. So those are usually for disturbance. So that's usually a buffer of disturbance. And as Anne said, you know, I might have a setback for my building from the property line, but I may have my BMPs or, you know, there may be things that happen within that side yard, whereas a creek buffer area or setback, you wouldn't allow that.
Thank you very much. And that's all my comments on this page.
All right. So we were on page 11. Mm-hmm.
On to 12.
We're ready to move to 12. All right. Mr. Jenkins?
The diagrams, first of all, I just want to thank staff for simplifying the height calculation by doing this. It's great when you take the contour and you raise, you have an imaginary contour that you raise higher and that determines the height. That's very helpful. And I think that's your intent, certainly under the measurement for slope lots. The diagrams, both these diagrams, have the height with arrows inside the structure, and I think those are a little irrelevant to the diagram, because it's almost suggesting you're averaging the height of the building, and we've steered away from averaging. It used to be we were dealing with mean roof heights and all the rest, and it was really confusing. So I think the diagram, you could actually eliminate the height and arrows within the structure, because you state in both of them, you say maximum building height is measured from the average elevation or building height follows the slope. So I think that's adding height because it just seems confusing and irrelevant. So my suggestion, that's all I have on 12.
Anyone else, anything on 12? No, moving to 13. Anyone have a comment on 13?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
We have a typo under figure 1703, measuring height of fences on retailing walls. I believe it should say retaining walls. And then down at the bottom, Mr. Schneider mentioned about regarding mezzanines and being consistent with the code. I agree with that, and I made a note of that myself. Mm-hmm. The section of the CBC, the California Building Code, that you want to look at is section 505. This mezzanine or balcony story is 1/3 of the total area of the nearest floor below. That agrees with the CBC. What does not agree with it is when you're saying more than two sides. So if you just would if staff would look at that and see if we can find some consistency there. That's all I have.
Anyone else? Any comments there? Moving on to 14. Mr. Daniels, did you have something for us?
Yes, Chair. Under 170307, dimensions of landscape area, again, there's a no, and you say no landscape area smaller. You could just say landscape area smaller. And then it goes on, then 5 feet. I mean, my opinion.
Right. And I think we had the public comment on whether that 5 feet dimension was.
That 5 feet dimension is intentional, and it is to avoid very small slivers of landscaping as counting toward the overall landscape that you're needing to provide. So where there's, say, a landscape requirement for 10% of the site may be landscaped. You can't make it up of all these little tiny, here's a one-by-one space that's has grass in it. Here's a, you know, two-by-two area that has a shrub. They have to be of a minimum size. And minimum 5 foot dimension is counted. It doesn't mean you can't landscape in areas smaller than that, but to count toward the required amount of landscaping, it needs to be at least a 5x5 area.
So just so I understand that, so like in an M1 district where there is a 10% requirement, and you're saying there would be a 5 foot long property line border where maybe they're putting in screening or something,
mm-hmm.
that would not?
If it's 5 feet, it would.
If it's 5 feet
wide,
any dimension of 5 feet, then it becomes qualifiable.
Right. It has to be at least a 5 foot by 5 foot space.
So about 4x4 don't make it. Got it. Now I understand. Thank you.
If your commission wants to, you know, you could recommend it being a smaller area, but that's what this says. It needs to be at least 5 foot dimension.
Okay. Mr. Fuller?
Yeah, I don't quite read it that way. You know, it's not clear if you say 5x5, then that's 5x5. But if you say 5 feet in any one direction, you're like, well, if it's 6 feet in this direction and 1 foot this direction, then it counts. So if you put 5x5, then we all know what it means. Or you could even put minimum 25 square feet. And now we've got, you know, another way of measuring it.
Right.
I think that would mean something different if you do minimum square footage, because then you could have a very long, narrow piece.
25 by 1.
Yeah, 25 by 1 would count,
well,
right?
We could say
so maybe
25 square feet with a minimum dimension of 5. We can
yeah,
clarify,
no landscape
yes.
area yeah. that is either that in any one direction is 5 feet or less. Something like that. Okay,
we'll work on it.
I just think it's not very user friendly. I mean, I understand what you're doing, but there are situations where you're dealing with a parking area, and you have minimum parking requirements, and then you have minimum landscape requirements, and if you have, you know, fingers and strips and all the rest, and to say you can't count this strip, I understand. I mean, you go to say the marketplace and you look and you see this sea of trees out there, they are in 8x8 planter boxes typically because it's the width of a parking space. So I understand that. But there are scenarios in parking lots where you will get fingers coming down. And boy, to say you can't count that, it seems very restrictive. So I was wondering if you know, less than 3 feet might be a little bit more friendly, but that's just my thoughts on that.
Well, when you get to that section, mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you get to the section on landscaping and parking lots, the requirements for those fingers are actually larger than 5 feet.
Okay, great. All right.
So that,
beautiful.
I think
right.
that
okay.
eases that rule.
Could I ask a related question? So why was 5 feet chosen? Is that for ecosystem or for aesthetics, or where did the 5 feet come from?
Well, it's... I would say it's not a hard and fast rule. It's not a magic number, but yeah, it's looking at, you know, what is a dimension that you can realistically plant something in or use or really kind of the root zone, what makes a difference. There's differing opinions on how wide a landscape planter needs to be, for example, in a parking lot to actually have a viable tree or a shrub. Some places will have this dimension less, some will have it more. It's
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Item two on the same page, it's back to height. It says, if the height of the upper surface of the floor to the ceiling above exceeds 25 feet, the space is counted as two stories, not one. I understand the spirit of that, but what about a theater? What if we have a theater that has a huge grand space? Are you going to count that as two stories?
You know, and we'd have to, when we get in the area that allows theaters and the heights, we can look at that. I don't know off the top of my head where the theaters are allowed, what their heights are, and even if they have a story limit. So if we can revisit that.
All right, any more comments on page 14? We're going to page 15. I think that gives us five to go. So we just got five more to go tonight. All right, on page 15. Anybody have comments there?
I got nothing.
All right. Page 16. Comments here on 16. Anybody?
Yes.
Yes, Commissioner Daniel.
Thank you. Chair, I would like to talk about the graphic on or the figure on 17-03-090B measuring common open space.
Yeah.
You know, you have another, you have a line that appears to be 20 feet also. So why don't you just call it out as 20 feet? You don't have, you have enough room to do it, and, you know, there's no really any constraints. And, you know, just don't confuse the people with arrows and that don't have any minimum square footage. My opinion only.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments here? Yes, Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, so this is 20 feet by 20 feet.
Right.
Right, okay. So it just says horizontal dimensions of 20 feet, but.
Got it.
All right, we're going on to page 17. Comments on page 17. Go ahead. Commissioner Fuller.
For 17-03-120A. Oh, sorry about that.
No, it was you. I used the wrong name.
Okay, good. I thought I saw the hand, but
no,
just listen to the rest. Okay, for A, I heard both the public comment and staff commentary on this one. I think that the in the case of a multi-story building that is covered or enclosed, stairwells, or elevator shafts, the horizontal area of such features is counted only once. That doesn't quite make sense to me. I think I'm going to have to go with the public comment on that and say it should be counted on every floor. That's just an opinion.
Okay. Anybody else on this page?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
First of all, just to respond to that, when we calculate stairwells, you count it once because it is it's a circulation, and so you count it. I typically count it on the ground level, and then the upper level. It's a hole basically with the stair coming up, so it's a hole within that floor diaphragm, if you will, and so you don't count it. So you count it once. So same with elevator shafts. So that is consistent with the building code. So that's why it's written that way, I believe.
Okay. If that is the building code, I'll just defer to the building code on that then.
On the page as well, we're getting into determining floor area. And the city looks like you're going with just gross only. You're departing from net and gross. Is that true? Because typically there was, you'd come up with a calculation for net floor area, which is the, you know, this room excluding the exterior walls. Okay, you count interior walls, but you would exclude the thickness of the exterior wall. That's your net square footage. That's the calculation that has historically been used by planning to determine the size of a building. The building department, on the other hand, uses gross square footage. So they're taking to the outside face of the exterior wall. I have no problem if you want to simplify it, but I think you're creating an issue where, architecturally, if the DRB is suggesting that we want recessed windows on an exterior wall, that forces that wall to become a thicker framed wall. So you're penalizing, you're taking from that square footage. And believe me, those little 2 inches around the entire perimeter really adds up when you're dealing in a tight situation. So my preference would be to stay with the net for planning purposes. That's consistent. That's, you know, the industry understands that. So I know you're dealing with two different numbers, but I think, you know, our computers are sophisticated enough to very easily come up with those two numbers for you. So my suggestion would be to go back to net versus gross.
Now, Mr. Jenkins, in that definition included in floor area, in the definition that existed there, it says habitable space below the roof, inside the outer walls. Is that not what you're talking about, Matt?
I'm not down in A. I'm up on the very top here, it's talking about gross horizontal areas of all floors measured from the outside perimeter of the exterior walls. Okay, and or the center line of interior walls if you're dealing in a duplex situation. So my suggestion would be to go back to net for determining floor area. Again, because you're dealing with, depending on the architectural style, you could have a 12-inch thick wall, okay? And you're just penalizing the heck out of that applicant.
Got it.
So...
could I ask, if we... look through the standards and there isn't a development standard that establishes maximum floor area, is it okay to use the gross floor area if floor area is used in calculating parking requirements and so on? So your concern is, well, if I'm limited to 2,000 square feet and DRB makes me have this, you know, I might, my 2,000 square foot building might go up to 2,200, but then I'm, or I have to.
Well, when we calculate floor area ratios, you're dealing with the net. You're not dealing with the footprint. You're not dealing with the gross.
Right.
So when you're dealing with lot coverages, then you're dealing with gross. Then you're dealing with the footprint. So if I have to produce a calculation that covers lot coverages separate from floor area ratio typically.
Right.
So, you know, so you are using gross in that situation when you're dealing with the footprint.
So if floor area ratio wasn't a limiting factor, it would be okay to use gross?
I think so. Yeah. I would have to think about that, but I think so. Yeah. Under A, I think, let's see, parallel 2 and 2 feet within. I would say, and within 2 feet, or it just seems the syntax is wrong, or within lines drawn parallel 2 and 2 feet within. I think it should say parallel lines 2 and within 2 feet of the roof line. So just move the word within. Under B, it says floor area. So we're now talking about excluding floor areas in the calculation. And it says floor areas below finished grade. What if you're dealing with a habitable basement? I don't even know if we have habitable basements in the city of Goleta. But okay, so certainly in older structures, there are. So I think in that situation, if it is habitable, you'd want to include it rather than exclude it. Just a typo, the semicolon should be snugged up to grade on that. Under C, this one's getting a little confusing for me because you talk about non-residential uses. Floor area includes pedestrian access, walkways or corridors, interior courtyards. And then non-residential floor areas do not include. So you got include and do not include. For the include, you have corridors, and for the do not include, you have arcades. And those are too similar. I think, you know, you're dealing with you know, unless in the definitions we specify what those are. If you define them for me, I'd be happier. I would suggest in the first top line that the floor area includes interior pedestrian access walkways versus saying the way it's written, you've got access interior walkways. So I would say interior pedestrian access walkways. It reads better.
And the interior was also supposed to relate to the corridors, which is the difference between the arcades, porticos, and similar open areas.
Which is,
so yeah, we can clarify.
Ooh, right, right. So a little clarification. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, and then porticos is spelled wrong. There's no E in porticos. Interior courtyards, is that something that has a roof over it, or is that open to the sky? When I think of an interior courtyard, I'm thinking, you know, kind of an atrium situation, and it's open to the sky.
And in that case, that could be interior courtyards, walkways, or corridors covered by a roof or skylight. So that could be either. And the idea is that if it's interior, it's really used by that by the building. So it can be used as usable space for whatever use is within that. Versus the arcades and other open areas that are located at or near street level and are accessible to the general public. So what is not included is areas that are open to the public and people can access. What is included are things that are, you know, kind of limited and only used by the occupants of that building.
Yeah, but you're still forcing them to include that in the square footage of the structure. And I, as far as, you know, floor area is really the context of this. So to me, it's not floor area. There's not a roof over it. It's not going to be used for, I mean, this, an interior courtyard is going to be used for a lunch break or for just seeing some beautiful growies out in the courtyard surrounded by glass and that type of thing. I think to include that in the square footage of a structure, we're going the wrong direction on that.
So maybe some clarification as to covered courtyard versus uncovered courtyard?
Yeah. If it's got a roof on it, I've got no problem with you doing it. But if it's covered courtyard, I'm not sure a courtyard is the right term then.
I think we understand yeah. and agree with what you're saying and can tighten up this wording here.
Thank you.
But not including an exterior courtyard within a building as a square footage. Yeah.
On the same page, under determining lot coverage, can you explain, under A, it says, and less than 6 feet, including railings. Can you explain that to me? I just had trouble wrapping my mind around that one.
So this is for something that is excluded from lot coverage, and that's, decks need to be less than 18 inches in height at the surface of the deck, and then the railings, and everything on top of that need to be less than 6 feet.
It's a little contrived. The code requires a 42-inch high railing, so maybe we just add 42 inches to your 18. I don't know. It seems like that would be a little bit more direct. Or six, well, you're saying 6 feet including the railings.
Well, the surface is at 18.
Okay.
So.
All right, unless the railing is unusually high. So I'm getting
right.
It, but I just, it's lacking a little clarity. Under B, eaves and roofs overhang project up to 2 feet from the wall. What if the eave is 36 inches?
Then that area beyond that 2 feet is considered part of lot coverage.
Okay.
So you get a certain exemption to accommodate eaves and overhangs. Okay. And then beyond that, it's counts towards lot coverage.
Again, it's you're driving something that the DRB could say, you know, we just feel this architectural style wants greater eaves, and then it's a penalty again.
Well, it's establishing the benchmark. Alternative, I mean, you could look at the other side of, well, it's an eave and it goes 6 feet out. And so that's kind of what it's mm-hmm. kind of trying to address both sides. You could say the measurement should be different, but that's the intent of establishing a certain number for that, what's excluded. Give some allowance, defined allowance.
Just to make that a little clearer, if I may, you could say any protrusion beyond that will be counted as
sure.
floor area. And then if we can still manipulate the number, maybe 3 feet is more, you know, appropriate to allow somebody to have than just 2 feet
yeah.
for certain
yeah.
styles.
2 feet, 2 feet is, I mean, architecturally, 2 feet is really nothing. Very tight. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's really, I mean, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright would have a cow. But and he can have a cow, too. It doesn't bother me. Under D, swimming pools and hot tubs are not enclosed in roof structures or decks that are not enclosed. What do you mean by deck? I understand not enclosed under roof structure. I mean, if a swimming pool is in a deck.
Right. Then that would be. So say you have a deck that comes out. Maybe it's like 6 feet high, and then you have the pool and your deck continues. So that whole entire thing is considered lot coverage.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you for that. That's all I have on 17, Mr. Chair.
All right. Anybody else on 17? Commissioner okay. Maynard?
Just a small one. I think there's a tailing and on D at the end of the page.
Mm. Oh, no, it does go on.
Ah.
There's an E on the next page.
Oh, it's and E. Okay, that makes sense. Thanks.
Anybody else? We're moving on to our second to the last page for the evening. Page 18.
I apologize in the beginning.
You did. And anybody have anything on 18?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins.
Very simple. Under the diagram for determining lot coverage, you're saying exclude non-habitable accessory structures less than 120 feet of roof area. Should that be singular, or can we have multiple structures that add up to 120 square feet? I believe it's the multiple. So I think the plural is correct.
Well, and E says one small non-habitable structure, so that diagram could clarify. Hmm.
Well, if you have multiple garden sheds and, you know, you go to, you know, a garden store, you're going to find typically an 8x8 versus a 10x12. So are we looking at total square footage, or are we looking at... So you'd give credit for one 8x8, and then you'd penalize the person if they had a second 8x8.
That's if you were allowed to have the second.
Ah.
So it really depends. You have to look at your setbacks and what else would
right.
be allowed. But yeah, you get credit for the one, and then right. anything more than that, you would
okay.
have to consider lot coverage. So you want to buy the bigger one first?
Yeah, apparently.
And then
okay. All right.
Anything else on this page? We're on page 18. Seeing none, we're moving on to page 19. Comments here? Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think we need a definition for ultimate right-of-way. And then we're talking about measuring setbacks here, and setbacks are measured as the distance between the property line, the ultimate right-of-way edge, or the back of sidewalk, whichever is closest to the building. I can think of some examples where the sidewalk is on the property. And so I believe that you'd want to strike that says back of sidewalk. I think really, I mean, we go to the assessor's parcel maps, which define the property lines, all right? And there's the meets and bounds and the legal description, the legal property description for that parcel. And if you just happen to have some arbitrary sidewalk that you're measuring from, that is just indeed arbitrary. And it's there, legally, you're opening yourself up to challenge. So I think you need to be tied more to the meets and bounds, the assessor's parcel map, and property lines, and not, I understand the legal, the right-of-way edge, and I'd like a definition on that, but the back of a sidewalk is too arbitrary. I would strike it.
The reason that there is a back of sidewalk is exactly what you're talking about. If a sidewalk did go on your property, and your setback is zero, and so what the city wouldn't want is you to build on the sidewalk. So it is in relation to that area, that public area.
Well, it's under the understanding that there's a distance, that there's a setback distance, all right? We're not talking about building on, we're not talking about the footprint, we're talking about distance from your property line, your setback.
Your required setback. And in
correct.
Some areas, there's zero, the required setback is zero. So you're required to build at the setback line.
Okay. Then you see my quandary, though, about the sidewalk?
Right.
In a residential application where there is no zero lot lines, there's no zero setbacks. And the developer, when they poured the sidewalks, they put them on the properties.
Well, I understand your concern because it's the following line, whichever is closest to the building or structure. So if the sidewalk was incorrectly poured and it's on the property line, it could actually end up creating a bigger setback than necessary because it adds on to the right-of-way. And then you would have to go from the back of the sidewalk to the house, and then you lose some land. So that's, we're going to want to look at that language and see if we can do something.
I just think you want to tie it to property
absolutely.
Lines. That's all I have.
Or a right-of-way.
Yeah. Right, yes, or right-of-way. You're correct.
One thing that I'd like to have eventually, we're looking at, and I'm trying to coordinate with Public Works on this, is a book of every street by block and the right-of-way distances across the city, because they're all different. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy, handy thing for someone at the counter to be able to say, oh, okay, if you go this far back of curb, if you have a curb, because not everybody here has curbs, then it's an easy way to determine your property line, even though you should always have your survey done. But if you're just estimating, it's a good way to do that. But that's a goal.
Well, and I appreciate the fact that you're attempting to simplify it, because the old code was from the center line, 50 feet from the center line of the street, and then 20 feet from the property line, and so you're dealing with two different numbers, and it was confusing. So I appreciate the spirit.
All right. That takes us through part one. Good job. Good job. Mr. Jenkins, thanks you for all your work. It's obviously very valuable in the process, even though, like you said, it'll be a little tedious at times.
It is. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if staff can address for us part two, what's on the agenda for part two, because I can't imagine us taking on all of part two next time.
We may need to think about how we want to look at that, because it's 66 pages long. The next one. So that would be, even if we split it into two meetings, we're going to be here another hour or so. And I'm not sure the commission would like to do that, but we certainly could. So we will look at ways to expedite that review, and with the knowledge that the global changes are noted. So at least that would be removed.
I'm sorry for interrupting. I kind of glanced ahead a little bit on this, and there may be some items in this where there may be some debate. So I think time needs to be allowed for that. If I were to make a suggestion, maybe we address the residential districts or land use zones and the commercial ones next time. Just those two. I don't know if that's going too slow, but maybe staff can look at that as far as breaking this up versus tackling all of part two. We need to apply our due diligence to it. So,
and I think to the degree that you have questions and we can meet, or we can do a phone call and talk about and get some just some clarifications, not make decisions, of course, but just clarify mm-hmm. questions so that we can get more quickly to whatever those challenging topics are that you may want to discuss as a group and give us some direction. Because that, I think, for us would be the most useful time and information that we would gain is those topics of debate.
And that information mm-hmm. would still be discussed at the meeting. It would just be we'd already have it for you. Instead of us plowing through codes or consulting with each other, we'd have those answers for you at the meeting for the public to hear.
I just, as I'm sharing my opinion, if I were to pick up the phone and call staff and share my opinion as far as maybe something that we would debate over, I may be totally out in left field.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I think to handle it in this process is probably the better.
Oh, no, that's where we would handle it. But right. But if you're asking the question of how did this come about or right. what was your intent with this, we would still note in that section, Commissioner Jenkins, this question. And then as we're going through it, it would already be there and we'd have that answer for you mm-hmm. again. So, or we'd have an answer for you if we didn't have it that time.
Okay. And I think a fundamental of that concept is no surprises. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, that we're not going to mm-hmm. surprise staff, because sometimes there's an in-depth question mm-hmm. That is not easily recognizable. So the idea is get them prepared mm-hmm. and then we'll have that full discussion with the information available mm-hmm. as much as we can here. Not at all to curb discussion.
Yeah.
Right. And staff recognizes there will always be surprises. There will always be things that mm-hmm. come up. But the more we can be prepared to answer your questions, that's what we'd like to do. And we want the hard questions. And that's what we're telling the community groups when we meet with them as well. Any hard question, anything that we've done tonight makes the code better. Mm-hmm. And the addressing those tough issues and, mm-hmm. and the typos and you know referencing points, that mm-hmm. reduces what will, if once it's adopted, it'll reduce that tweak list, that's what I tend to call it, of changes that will have to happen in that first year mm-hmm. because of the things that we find as we're using the code. So this is great, having all of these really specific questions and changes as we move forward. It just makes the code better.
Yes, Mr. Fuller.
Yes. Just wanted to go back to the workload here. I mean, we're also going to be talking about a couple of things that we didn't talk about tonight, you know, with more information next week, so our next meeting. And so having a smaller bite next week would probably be good.
Sounds chicken to me.
Just remember, the smaller the bites, the more meetings we'll have.
Yeah.
So,
I think we've got a little finish, a wrap-up here. Did you have any more information you wanted to give us other than perhaps move that April timeline back a little bit?
I think the only thing I want to add is we're here at your pleasure. We're here. We will work late. We're used to it, and we're game. So we don't mean to sound like you have to call us ahead of time or whatever. You don't have to call us ahead of time if that's not working for you. We can do this and come back with a wrap-up. And we can add special meetings in so that we can stick to our timeline. So if we're falling behind, we can do some back-to-back meetings. We do have, because of some spring break, we have the March 21st meeting, which would normally be the following week. That's the date that we're proposing, and we can talk about that as we get closer. But I just wanted to give you a heads up that we are literally taking every single one of your meetings, with the exception of that March 21st date. That would be a special meeting.
Commissioner Maynard?
Just can I ask that as soon as we can know what potential special meeting date times are, if you could get those out to us, just because my schedule gets booked up fairly far in advance, and I just want to make sure I set aside the proper time to support the commission.
Absolutely.
Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, and I this may be consuming a lot of Planning Commission time, and you know, while we're working on this, we may not be working on other things, but I have the sense that the community also wouldn't mind it if this, you know, took longer, that and that we took it in smaller bites so that they also can, you know, follow along with us and be prepared with comments on the sections that we're doing. Just my two cents.
All right, let's go to the director's report.
You have, I believe, Wendy Winkler has contacted you regarding the Lake of Cities Planning Commission's Academy, Planning Commissioners Academy, March 2nd through 4th of this year in San Ramon. I don't know how many of you are interested, but please respond. I know Commissioner Maynard is already asked to go, but if the other four of you could respond, okay, Ed, to Wendy, we'll go ahead and make those reservations and get you set up for that. It actually looks like a good 2-3 days. Peter Calthorpe will be giving the keynote address, which he's great. So it should be good education and a good chance to talk to your other commissioners from around the state. Other than that, I don't have much to report. We're moving forward on this project. We're very pleased with all the input we've gotten to date. We started with public meetings the day we got back from break with our Santa Barbara Association of Realtors. And they had some very good questions, very specific concerns about real estate signs and other things that they would like to see. And those comments will be noted. We'll be updating our ordinance subcommittee once a month with where we are in the process and comments as we are moving forward. And so that'll just be by writing. I don't know if they'll want to meet on that, but we'll have those opportunities. And I'm just looking forward to, as this process moves forward, just not only working with the commission, but talking to all the different facets of the community who are interested in this. We're getting really good comments, and I think it's going to end up being a great document.
All right. We can go to commissioner comments. Anybody want to make a comment before we close? Mr. Maynard?
Just a heartfelt thank you to the staff and the consultants that worked so hard on this and presented such great detail and humored all of our comments and questions today. So I just really appreciate all the work that you've put into this and helping to prepare us for going through this. So thank you very much. And thank you especially for all of the comments and discussion today. And I love seeing all of the questions from the commission. So I know there was nervousness about asking too many questions, but I for one always appreciate that. So thank you very much.
Anyone else? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
A second.
Do we have a first and a second?
Second.
First.
Please.
You will be first.
Yes.
Commissioner Maynard will be second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. I never said anything.
We knew you were coming. We knew it was coming.
You went to touch the mic. That's it.